Hello, and welcome back to the Herb Doctor. How are you, Dilish?
I'm fine, Kat.
You sound fabulous today.
Thank you. New microphone.
A new microphone. So, welcome back. How are you doing? How's things? What are we talking about today?
Things are good. It's May. The herbs are coming up. The sun has been shining. And, yeah, it's good to be alive.
Great. What are you discussing today?
I'm discussing areas around responsibility for health and beliefs.
Okay.
And what's available.
Great.
Okay. So you won't all be surprised to hear that it is my strong impression and recommendation that we all need to take some level of responsibility for our health. I think across the industrialized world, we're beginning to realize that the medical system will not necessarily rescue us. They are not the agents of our health. They can help us live with disease, and they can rescue us from acute medical emergencies very effectively. They have provided a lot of, and this system has provided a lot of answers in dealing with infectious diseases, infant mortality, and maternity services in particular. And it's certainly the service I would look for if I was in a road traffic accident or had a sudden collapse. But in terms of what it doesn't very well provide solutions for is chronic illness. We all know about the pandemic, the infectious pandemic, in which the current acute medical system was largely paralyzed in terms of having treatment options. So that's not one of the strengths. But if we look at our current pandemic, which is not really being relayed to the general population, it's in chronic disease. And what underlies all of that is basically chronic inflammation. This applies to things like autoimmune disease, cardiovascular disease, and anything which is associated with an underlying what is referred to as meta-inflammation, which is inflammation in every cell in the body, every interstitial space, every extracellular fluid space. And you will be familiar with a lot of the conditions that it's associated with. Some of them are benign prostate problems in men, diabetes mellitus, the maturity onset. And what you might not be aware of is mental health. I mean, that's just to cover a few things just to raise the perspective of it. Osteoarthritis is another one. And a lot of autoimmune diseases are an elevated inflammatory system affecting every cell in the body. There's a pandemic in these conditions, and it's not being served well by long-term drug therapy. It is very useful. I'm not for a minute suggesting that it isn't. But it's about disease management, it's about symptom suppression, and there are significant side effects, adverse effects, unwanted effects. And they can also lead to hospital admissions and even deaths. So we're not talking about minor issues here. We're actually talking about preventing ill health, living with adverse effects, and living your best life, really. So, this is where we come on to beliefs. What do we believe in? What kind of medicine do we believe in? And what kind of belief do we have in our own ability to influence these things? So, sometimes people think that beliefs are things that are necessarily true. But there are very few things in life that are true in every sense of the world or in every manifestation of the world. So sometimes we have a belief in something because it's repeatedly presented to us, because nothing different is in our awareness. Sometimes we believe in things because conformity is a very basic and essential need for us as human beings. To be outside the pack is to be uncomfortable, almost by definition. And sometimes we think that beliefs are to do with the reasoning. And part of it is to do with the reasoning, but not all. The spiritual beliefs are not based on reasoning. But even within reasoning, we accept things, kind of phrases that sound very convincing, like evidence-based medicine, until we look at what the evidence is based on. And the evidence is based on what questions are asked. And very frequently, the questions asked serve particular interests. This was brought home to me very clearly one evening. I was at a medical meeting and they were discussing a brush for cells at the bottom of the esophagus, the tube that goes between your mouth and your stomach. And it was a brush, a bit like having a cervical smear. And they would put that on a plate and they would look at it and see whether the cells were normal. And this was being put forward for people who have very, very high levels of damage to the lower esophagus due to reflux of stomach acid. It's called Barrett's disease. And if somebody had this cytology brush, quite a simple procedure done every 1 to 2 years, depending on their level of risk, they wouldn't need to take drugs. It was acknowledged at the meeting that this would never take off because there's no sales. In this, you'd be selling a small brush for each patient as compared with drugs for a prolonged period of time and a very high dose of these drugs. So it was just accepted that although this was a good idea, although it worked well, the evidence was there that this would actually never take off. So doctors are aware of the interests that are served. And we all just get on with the best that we can do under the circumstances. So beliefs are formed by making connections between what we experience, the information we are given, what we witness and what we hear. But if we think of beliefs as things that are not fixed, things that can be interpreted and reinterpreted and even be different in different circumstances. And that leads us to think of our beliefs as, what is it about our beliefs that holes can be poked in? What are the gaps in our beliefs? What do they not explain? Who do they exclude? Who do they include? And who benefits from what our beliefs are? And just think about where we got them from. It's also useful to think of what the wider implications are. If we completely support one system of a way of doing things, it could be education, it could be medicine, it's not only medicine, then what are the wider implications of this? And the thing that I think is particularly relevant in medicine is, what about the precautionary principle? Just because medicine invents something doesn't mean that it doesn't have much wider implications down the road. I'll give you an example of that. The latest wave of intervention of drugs on a massive scale over the last 10, 15 years has been the introduction of biologic agents. And these are genetic manipulations using living organisms like bacteria and creating agents. They're not drugs, they're agents which can affect disease processes and very reliably reduce symptoms and also treat cancer. The cost to the health service is massive. This is thousands for each person per year. So what are the implications of that for services, for all kinds of everyday problems? That people are on waiting lists for in Ireland, England, the United States, everywhere in the industrialized world, there is a massive pressure on the health services. So what are the implications for the precautionary principles of effects on other services? But also these agents can promote or leave people vulnerable to infectious diseases. So we're going back to possible concerns about infectious diseases, which we had done so much to manage. And inevitably, it's an immune suppressing. So what are the implications for cancers long term? They've been rolled out on a massive scale in the population without being tested over 20, 30 years, which is how long it takes for carcinogenic effects to become evident. Initially, new products are rolled out for very, very severe conditions. And then as the safety issues become more aware, then they're rolled out to more moderate and mild problems. But biologic agents are now being used as a first line. Lots of indications as to what to treat with them, but very little on how to get people off them. Is this indefinite? Is this for 20 years, 30 years? When I started medicine, I never saw inflammatory bowel disease, ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease in children. And this is now a regular presentation. Not rare. Uncommon, yes, but not rare. So these children are being put on biologics from a very young age. And there's no question. There's no precautionary principle. We could say the same about the COVID vaccines being given to children. Children weren't dying. There was no body bags of children unless they had very severe other illnesses, which is very sad. But to give the whole of the recommendation for all children to be given a COVID vaccine, to me, was ignoring the precautionary principles. So the other thing about beliefs is about building alliances on what is controversial, rather than defending what we hold to be true under all circumstances. So debate and building a wider system so that there is more inclusiveness with an open heart and an open mind for our own beliefs and for those of others. I'm talking about the health service and how we look at our health, but this applies to all kinds of avenues. We might wonder why the belief is held rather than whether it is a truth or whether it is one that I agree with. It's worth looking for possibilities that are not presented to us, things that are outside the box. And this is where we come to the road less travelled with herbal medicine. It was a long introduction. I hope it's been worth it.
Absolutely.
So one of the biggest issues for herbal medicine is that for the last 125 years, almost to the day that the Flexner report was published, and we'll come back to that another time, but there's certainly a marker in time. Previous to that, about 100 years of a gradual takeover by chemical medicines. So, and both of these approaches were not particularly evidence-based. That's worth noting. So I thought I'd look at whether herbs are worth bothering about with a specific, explaining it with a specific condition in mind, and that condition is COVID. So, but COVID, of course, is not isolated from other influenza or upper respiratory tract viruses, but it was certainly a focus in time in terms of medical care. So there's two references. One is to Fabio Boylan in a 2020 article on herbs for the COVID pandemic, and Michael Heinrich, a professor of ethnopharmacology, and they're going to present two different ways of looking at things. In a LinkedIn post, Michael Heinrich, the professor of pharmacology, answer the question as to whether any herbs would be useful for COVID-19. And his short answer was none. He did elaborate. He then said, however, some may be helpful with symptomatic relief. That would be nice. We were all feeling not very, very happy with the symptoms of COVID. But he then went on to list all the things not to use in herbal medicine, how to tell how not to use something. Okay. So one is if it makes a claim, even a non-specific claim to help. If the detailed composition and production methods were not available. If there was no warning notes as to what harm it might cause. If there was not a description of its limitations and side effects. And if it was not assessed and approved by the FDA / EMA, the European Medical Agency. So given that herbal medicines are adjuvants to help. Nobody is aiming with a herbal medicine to cure or any more than pharmaceutical medicine, but This is the difference between drug, which is an isolated chemical designed to have suppressant effects on the body in a way that is numerically detectable over a period of time. We, as opposed to herbal medicine, which is more, the ones that are available over the counter would be more in line with foods, have been used for thousands of years, and are used as an aid to health recovery rather than to suppress or cure disease. So all of his requirements would be necessary for pharma drugs because of the nature of drugs. By definition, drugs are toxic, whereas thyme tea is in your stuffing for your Sunday roast. Elderflowers are based on a cordial, and they're two of the herbs that are considered. So he then goes on to note that it is illegal to claim to treat or alleviate symptoms of conditions, of coronavirus conditions, and that herbal medicines are only allowed for use in, for minor or short-acting conditions. Without taking into account that for the vast majority of the population, the COVID influenza was in fact a self-limiting condition, and that it's likely that if you alleviated the symptoms and some of the manifestations of the COVID vaccines, you could actually prevent deterioration of some of these minor conditions and therefore avoid more serious, complicated advancement. So, but this gives you an idea of what herbal medicine is up against, right? This professor's beliefs are true, but the implications are that massive numbers of people were put off, discouraged, and made helpless, disempowered. I think that would be one of the implications. And given that the precautionary principle for using herbs for influenza have very little cause for concern. So that's just putting the two in context. So going on to Fabio Boylan, who is one of 9 or 10 pharmacologists worldwide from very eminent institutions. I mentioned Fabio Boylan because he's one of our own. He's in Trinity College in Dublin, where he's, I think it's an associate professor. And he and his team did research on, is there evidence for the use of herbal medicines as adjunctive treatment for COVID-19. It was published in September 2020, and the article is available in full to the general public. Yet there were 9 other pharmacologists. And what they did was they looked at herbs that were traditionally indicated for respiratory diseases, and the majority of them were listed by the World Health Organization and the European Medical Agencies. And they looked at preclinical and clinical research for early and mild flu symptoms, right, which would be most of us. They used a very interesting system of analysing called PROACT, which is a system of evidence bases which covers wide periods of time, and it's more general in an approach for population-based diseases, all right? And they used the reference drugs as nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories, paracetamol and codeine. And these were the things that the medical agencies were advising people to use for symptomatic management. Interestingly, out of those three options, only the only one that showed positive promising indications for use were the nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories. They looked for 4 outcomes: positive adjunctive effects, promising adjunctive effects, that's helpful, negative adjunctive effects are unknown. They identified 39 herbs, 5 they found to have positive effects, 12 to have promising effects. There were no unknowns and there were no negatives. From the reference drugs, only non-steroidal anti-inflammatories showed promising effects, so none showed positive effects. There was no compelling evidence to endorse paracetamol or codeine. Okay. So there's evidence and beliefs in a very sharp kind of side-by-side way of looking at things. So beliefs are ways of looking at things. The herbal medicines were superior safety margins compared with the reference drugs. And they were used to re-establish old beliefs and remind us of thousands of years of experience and accumulated knowledge and wisdom. Now, Katrina is nodding at me. This is what makes sense to me in terms of I absolutely love evidence-based medicine,
yeah,
whether it's herbal medicine or drug medicine. My concerns are the precautionary principle, implications, and use of something because it's there. Because it's there, we gave children COVID vaccines. And children, if there are negative consequences long-term with COVID vaccines, and I hope they aren't, the children who aged 5, 6, 9, 16 will be living with that for 70, 80, 90 years. If I was to recommend it, as I did, for elderly parents and in-laws and relatives, given there was an element of uncertainty about it, a higher risk-benefit analysis, especially for the first wave, then they would be living with it for 5, 10, 15 years. And to me, that's a huge difference when I look at beliefs. Really, what do I believe? I believe that children should be protected and that people should be empowered. They would be my beliefs. And there are limitations to everything. Everything. I hope that's helpful in terms of how we look at the road less traveled, which is what herbal medicine is representing today. This journey took me 10 years. I hope I've summarized it in a way that it might be.
100%, yeah. I'm actually feeling quite emotional listening to you about it. When you mention the children of now and they have to go through this for the next part of their life, the rest of their life, I find that really hard to take, to be quite honest with you.
No, I'm the last person to be fear-mongering. The point is that we didn't know. We don't know. That's the point. And I certainly would take a cautious, I believe in a cautious approach.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. And herbal medicine suits me perfectly because I like a cautious and empowering. This is about empowering. This isn't about fear. This is about empowering and doing the best that we can with the life that we have, because it is time expired for all of us. So, and having fun.
And it's so precious.
It's so precious. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I think that was absolutely amazing to listen to. If you are happy with what we're doing, I hope you like and share. And please put it up on your social media at The Herb Doctor. We are here and we want to do so much more with this podcast. So we hope you are enjoying it. So you can give us a like and a share, and we'll talk to you very, very soon. Anything else from you, Dailish, before we go?
No, have fun.
Okay, take care. Thank you. We look forward to you joining us on this journey of exploration and learning with the herbal doctor, Dr. Dailish Clare. And we'll be back with you very soon. So thank you very much, and stay tuned.